Good morning. I hope you're having a fine sunny morning. Welcome back to another edition of Miami Valley Voices on this Cox radio station. I'm your host from the Dayton Daily News, Ron Rollins, and we are in the studio today with a returning guest who was here a year and a half, 2 years ago, I think, Jerry Leggett, the executive director of the Dayton International. I want to make sure I get in international. The Dayton International Peace Museum. How are
Very
you?
Very nice. Good morning, Ron. Right.
Tell us why you are an international peace museum if you're right here in Dayton, Ohio. Just describe the place for anybody that is not yet familiar with our fine peace museum. Clue
hey,
in.
It's downtown, and it's in the hub of everything, and it is in a beautiful historic building, 1867. So you'll come and see a beautiful staircase and
it's
woodwork.
It's a gorgeous building, yeah.
Yeah, so it makes Dayton proud insofar as it's one of the last high Victorian examples of architecture. We
right
love
there
that.
On Monument Avenue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Down, you're kind of catty-cornered from the Y Tower. Yeah.
Exactly,
right.
And the new Charlie Sims Monument Walk.
That's right. You guys have new neighbors.
We do.
That's right. Now, I haven't been by there in a couple of weeks, but that's the luxury townhouses that are going in down the street from you.
Yes.
Wow. Your neighborhood's getting crowded.
Wow.
And more peaceful, we hope.
Very exciting, really. It's nice. It's great to be downtown.
Sure.
And
there's all kinds of stuff going on down there. So people walk in, they see it's a beautiful 1867 building. What's inside?
They walk in, they get greeted by a trained, what we call peace docent.
Oh.
They're trained to make sure they get a good cup of coffee, a nice little piece of chocolate, a fair trade piece of coffee, chocolate. And to have a chance just really to explore ideas around what peace looks like. Maybe not always all the answers, but a lot of opportunity to engage with good questions. Because we live in a very diverse community with many ideas about what peace looks like. You know, how do we engage those ideas in a way that builds community rather than polarizes people?
That's interesting. And there are exhibits, definitely, right?
Yeah. This is called the Season of Nonviolence, between the time when Gandhi's death and Dr. Martin Luther King's death, the season in which we remember ways in which nonviolence can help us be a more peaceful, joyful, fun, safe place.
When is the anniversary of Gandhi's passing? I don't know.
So it's about January 30th.
Okay.
And then King, of course, would be in April.
Right.
The 30th or so.
And both assassinated. I'd forgotten about Gandhi.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I guess I've never heard of that. As that season. That's interesting. How do you mark it at the museum?
So the way we're marking it is we've got a very nice exhibit up about Gandhi, and you can get to kind of quickly sort of see a little bit of his life. You can see a video about the Great Salt March, an extraordinary event in history that our children don't always know about. You can take up a little pinch of salt with you and rub it in your hands and have the tactile feel of that. So that's really good, and it's in our main exhibit hall. The museum's about 4,000 square feet, so we're not a huge, not like the Air Force Museum.
Which is a little considerably larger.
But we get folks that come from there to our space and vice versa, so it's nice to be able for people to ponder all these important questions.
That's interesting. How does it feel to be kind of the bookend of the Air Force Museum? Certainly not every plane in the Air Force Museum was dedicated to warfare necessarily, but the lion's share of them were. So we'll talk about that dichotomy a little bit. Dayton, since the Bosnian Peace Accords, has been kind of trying to craft itself as a city of peace. Where does the museum fit into that? And we're an Air Force town and all that? I mean,
We fit into thanking people who work for peace. We fit in knowing we don't have all the answers. A person who dedicates their life to the Air Force and works hard to, you know, do what they feel makes for a more peaceful world ought to be listened to. They're a person we ought to honor for what they're trying to do. And a person who feels like they could never pick up a gun, but they could go as a medic, and or they're willing to work like Gandhi did in other ways. I think the Peace Museum is a place where we want to try to listen to everyone's kind of way of working for peace. And that's not to say there's not hard issues about war and peace that we have to address. There are. I'm really excited that we're going to be working, it's preliminary, working with the VA in 2017. They celebrate their 150th anniversary of working in Dayton. As you may know, my spouse worked for nearly 20 years as a therapist working with returning combat vets. And I feel deeply that it's important that we recognize the trauma that comes as a result of the service that Air Force people put in, the service that other people who living in situations of violence experience. Mm-hmm. So a peace museum is also a place where we recognize that trauma is an experience that marks people in a way that when they come into a peace museum, mm-hmm. maybe they're just looking for that positive interaction mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and not a lecture,
right.
But you know, someone who wants to engage with them in a way that's peaceful.
What do the peace docents do? What sort of function do they serve?
Well, it's a program that I implemented when I came, and so they're trained to, first of all, make sure that every guest has the opportunity to engage around the question, what does a more peaceful world look like for you? Mm-hmm. They're also trained to take people on a journey so you can kind of see the museum either on your own, so give a little bit of an introduction to it, but they're also trained to try to listen carefully to mm-hmm. people, and then they're trained to also to take what people say, and lots of times there's an idea that comes out of there that is the genesis for the seed mm-hmm. for a new exhibit. Someone mm-hmm. says, oh, have you thought about this? Mm-hmm. So, for example, we did a exhibit a while back about how the Air Force does some amazing humanitarian things that we can all celebrate as are wonderful. That mm-hmm. came out of you know, an interaction with a guest who came in.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think that's true of all the branches of the military, really.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was a Marine who, Matthew Perkey, who just recently moved out of town. He worked at the United Way, and yeah. he talked about he was stationed in Iraq and Afghanistan, but he also yeah. he said that he told me often that the hardest deployment he had was in Haiti after the earthquake.
Yeah.
And because it was just so devastating, and it was purely a peace mission yeah. to distribute food and water and help with housing and stuff, but that it was harder almost than the his combat missions, because it was just so overwhelming, and the amount of work and devastation they had to do, and it was the one that kind of he felt changed him the most,
yeah.
if that makes sense. He talked about that a lot.
Interesting. We talk about celebrating peace heroes and peace hero ideals, and you and I have talked about this a little bit mm-hmm. before, but the wonderful thing about having that emphasis is a person can come in and they're a peacenik, or they're a soldier who, regardless of their approach, mm-hmm. these peace hero ideals, which are we recognize our interconnectedness, mm-hmm. we promote justice, and we reject vengeance, these three ideals help kind of bring our community together in ways that sometimes the traditional peace message does not.
Go over those again, those three things.
So the three things are, a peace hero is a person who recognizes our interconnections.
Okay.
You talked about Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
So we're connected with people in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
We promote justice.
Mm-hmm.
We do want a world where it's fair.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then finally, we reject vengeance. You know, there's a role for justice. There's a role, but vengeance really is just not even intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't really get us to smart outcomes,
mm-hmm.
best practices.
And it tends to be the thing that kind of continues the ball rolling down
yeah.
down the road without thought of how to stop it.
Yeah.
And we're here with Jerry Leggett from the Dayton International Peace Museum today. It sort of sounds, though, like that those are ideas that it strikes me that, and we've never really talked about it this way, but it seems like the idea of peace is something that, for most people, it's not a black and white thing. It's kind of a very deeply shaded gray. And I don't know if you agree with that, but if you do, talk about that a little bit. I mean, just the three things, for example, that you mentioned there as points that would define a peace hero at the museum,
sure.
those are all complicated. And they're all situational, I guess, maybe, for people, or maybe not. What do you think?
Well, I think they're a lens. They're a broad lens through which some people might want to choose to think about what peace looks like, because it doesn't matter unless you're truly a hate monger or you just really like to kill people. I mean, most people I would think would recognize we're all human and we're connected. There's part of us that, you know, we're, mm-hmm. and same way with justice, everyone I think for the most part thinks the world should be fair. Now, you're right, it's complicated what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, these stories that we tell allow us to understand that some people like dark chocolate, some people like milk chocolate, some people don't like chocolate at all. And who's wrong and who's right? No one's wrong necessarily. When we hear each other's stories, the world's not made up of atoms, the world's made up of stories. Mm. When we hear these stories, we can at least have a better chance at making the world more peaceful, mm-hmm. you know, because we've listened to other points of view. I like to think that the best approach to peace myself is the best science plus the best practices equal the best peace.
Hmm.
And I like to think of Orville and Wilbur Wright,
mm-hmm.
who actually saw in the air the bird flying and thought, you know, science would allow us to do that. And everyone at first said, no, mm-hmm. no way. Just like we usually look at situations of violence and we say, the best solution is war, mm-hmm. okay? We think that's the best science.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, we know that the Wright brothers were right.
Mm-hmm.
They used the best science and got an amazing outcome. And really, the myth is that violence works best most of the time. The truth is, there are some cases where, unfortunately and sadly, violence seems to be the only way for an immediate response. But the museum's focused on the idea the best science says nonviolence works a lot more than we give it credit for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's have less soldiers go to war. Let's have more children being bullied. So let's practice the science mm-hmm. of nonviolence. Does that make sense?
It does. An interesting observation about Orville and Wilbur, though, too. I mean, if you think about Orville, he got to see his invention be used to drop the atomic bomb out of a plane, you know?
I mean,
he died in 47, so...
That's right.
He saw the whole spectrum of things that his invention would be used for, and they... I wonder what that felt like. That had to be really weird because it's not what they intended. Certainly, they did when they were selling their plane to the army as the
right.
first place. They were selling it to the Signal Corps, which imagined that the use of an airplane would be for reconnaissance and for mapping and things like that, not for dropping bombs out of. I wonder how that felt to be him.
Yeah, and I think that what that illustrates is that we sometimes look at things and say they're bad or they're good, or they work or they don't work, when the fact of the matter is, it depends on how we use them.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you're in the military or you're a peacenik, it's how a person lives out their duty mm-hmm. that really matters. You know, soldiers have to do very hard things.
Mm-hmm.
So do people that believe that nonviolence works best most of the time. If we could just engage the best science,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that's hard to do, but what is the best science about how you respond to violence?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it comes to ISIS, whether it comes to what's happening in Syria right now,
mm-hmm.
or in Dayton, where we see a lot of violence sometimes in our lives.
So to play devil's advocate, and I don't want to play devil's advocate.
Oh, come on, go for it.
I guess not devil's advocate so much as something I wonder about as somebody who largely subscribes to, you know, nearly everything you're saying. I've often wondered how much this conversation is able to take place because we live in a society in which we can afford to have it. You know, I mean,
right.
For the most part, I mean, there's, of course, the United States isn't perfect, but for the most part, we live in a society in which violence is going down, you know, Steven
right.
Pinker's famous book.
Right.
So violence is going down and things on almost every level. You know, corporal mm-hmm. punishment is
right.
going down, homicide is going down, despite notable flare-ups that get a lot of media attention.
Right.
Death in combat and warfare around
right.
the country and around the world is going down. Conflicts between nations, and so I don't know. I often wonder how much this is a conversation that makes sense because we can afford to have it, or if it's that these things are happening because people have been having the conversation, kind of a chicken and egg thing. I don't know.
Try the lens again of the peace hero ideals.
Mm-hmm.
What if everyone listening to this right now took what you just said and took the first ideal of recognizing our interconnections? If we were to recognize our interconnections, let's just keep it in the U.S. since, you know, there's that, okay.
Sure.
If we recognize our interconnections, we'd recognize it in our own country. We have a lot of people that are struggling with just the violence of not being able to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
Moms and dads who want more for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Young college students that want to be educated. And we have some of these systemic things that really need to be looked at. And so I think that's where we should, you know, look at the way nonviolent living can help us seriously consider if we're really connected to people, not only in our own country, around the world, when we have maybe 2 billion or more that don't even have adequate water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, war and violence those are important things, but not having enough water is as violent as any war.
Sure.
Ultimately.
Which actually, and I should tell people, was Miami Valley Voices this Sunday morning. We're with Jerry Leggett from the Dayton International Peace Museum talking about peace and the ideas of it. Now, that's an interesting idea, though. I mean, that's a fairly broad definition of violence. I mean, talk about that a little bit. I mean, for many people, violence, again, it not being a black and white thing.
Yeah.
Violence, it's like, you know it when you see it. He stabbed him. Well, that's violent, you know, or he hit him. But you're talking about, by your definition, the Flint water crisis would be violence.
Well,
you know, I mean, right? I mean, or yeah. Something like that. Or the fact that there's people who show up at the soup kitchen.
The crisis
needing
isn't,
hunger,
isn't
you know,
necessarily the only part of it. It's
right.
Violent. It's the way we're, the way we experience our interconnections to other people. We are so, we're so creative as people. There's so much more we could do. I can think about it in terms of my work in Hawaii as a mental health professional, where mm-hmm. I supervised 9 crisis workers. Within 45 minutes, it was our job to respond to a child who was saying they were going to harm themselves or harm someone else. Mm-hmm. That crisis, as much as you could see it on the outside, was something happening inside a person. Mm-hmm. And there was violence, maybe because of cultural trauma or maybe mm-hmm. because of a wrong that had been committed, or they just didn't, you know. So I think that violence does have a broad definition, and it has a lot to do with how it impacts inside of us as well as what we see outside.
Mm, that's interesting. You had mentioned before we turn on the mics that there's a you mentioned young people, that there's a program for young people that you've recently instituted at the Peace Museum. I forget the acronym you used, TIPS, is that right?
Nice lead, thank you.
Please, well, we're all about segues. we're all about segues at Miami Valley Voices, Jerry. So.
TIPS, Teens Inventing Peaceful Solutions. We are creating a new program at the museum where we're bringing together what I would describe as the face of Dayton. Mm-hmm. High school age youth to learn what we call peace literacy. Peace literacy equals the art of living peaceably. So what can we do to help young people be able to have the skills and knowledge they need to be more peaceful, to be peacemakers? And so this will be happening in about, I believe it's 8-week sessions. We're looking right now to recruit about a class of about 10 young people mm-hmm. that want to, for this year, study hard and be the pilot project for, we hope we could engage this program much larger mm-hmm. basis.
That sounds like some of the stuff that NCCJ works
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
Are you tied in with them on this? Or
well,
we should remind people who that is. It's the National Coalition
Conference.
Conference for Community and
Community
Justice.
We're very supportive of their effort to do the Anytown Youth
right,
Camp
the youth
through
camp,
the
right.
Peace Heroes Walk.
Right.
This is kind of a program in which we're specifically teaching skills related to peace literacy. So it's a program like that. And by the way, people can go on our website mm-hmm. and learn more about it. It's just DaytonPeaceMuseum.org.
So what happens with these young people? You said a class of about 10 over what age and over what period of time?
The ages are roughly from about, I think it's 12 to 17.
Okay.
I may not get that exactly
sure.
right, but you can get it on the website.
Middle school, high school age. Yeah.
And so they're with adults that mm-hmm. are skillful teachers and mentors. Mm-hmm. And then this group is learning things, sometimes things that seem maybe to all of us like they should be natural, but they're not. How do you regulate your emotions when you're upset? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with bullies? You know, how do you learn to mediate conflict? Mm-hmm. You know, these kinds of things. How do you deal with a culture of fear mongering? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. if you're an Islamic student, how do you deal at school with mm-hmm. the teasing mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. harassment?
Talk about the whole Islamic thing at the moment. There's a lot in the news about Islamophobia, the idea of it. I mean, certainly it's almost like it's a very prevalent thread in the media these days, of course, and in the election. And of course, the president, rather courageously, I thought, going to visit a mosque this week.
Yeah.
And getting some fairly emotional and responses from the people that he met there.
Yeah.
Talk about that in our lives these days. It seems to be mm-hmm. not going away. But where do you think that's headed?
Well, last night at UD, mm-hmm. at the Kennedy Students Union, mm-hmm. there was a packed house of people listening to 3 very engaging presenters try to address the question, Islamophobia racist?
Mm-hmm.
And so really great conversations from a variety of people. And for me, I think, you know, you've probably seen the T-shirt, no child is born a racist. Mm-hmm. Maybe no child is born a terrorist. The point is that education can get us through this situation we have right now, which mm-hmm. has so much to do with a small group of people trying to give voice for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things we talked about last evening was, I mean, is it okay to say just because a small group of people or people do bad things, they can't be considered to be part of a certain religious group? Mm-hmm. That's part of it, is who gets to decide that? Mm-hmm. And so I think last night, a lot of consensus was around so much that happens, whether it's ISIS, et cetera, is about politics. It's not about Islam per se. Mm-hmm. It's not, it doesn't reflect the core values, mm-hmm. but it gets, you know, subjugated mm-hmm. and gets media attention by a few very loud and mm-hmm. horrific, more than a few, some horrific acts mm-hmm. that get all of our attention.
I wish I could remember where I ran into it recently, but I read something a while back about ISIS that struck me kind of hard, and it was basically the argument that the religion Islam for ISIS is basically a cover. It's a cover story that basically these guys are a very large army of gangsters who yeah. are instituting not a theocracy but a kleptocracy, in which basically they're just out to steal everything they can from anybody. Using the example of when they move into a village, mm-hmm. they basically, a large part of their income is the stuff that they steal from the people that were there, you know, like right out of people's households. And that basically it was not a religious state. You could argue that, like, you know, Iran is a religious right. state, right. but that ISIS is basically a gangster state. It's literally a thieves' paradise, you know. And I was like, wow. I mean, that squares with so much of what we've read, but about the whatever they're doing there. But it also was coming at it from a much different point of view, I thought, where it's like, take the religion out of it. That's just what they're showing you to get you to respond a certain way. It has nothing to do with it, and they're gangsters. And I was like, wow, that's profound. And I've been thinking a lot about it since I read it, and I don't know if it's true, but it made a lot of sense to me. Where do you see this going?
Well, where do I see it going? I just want to comment. People get to self-identify themselves. If ISIS really, if someone in ISIS wants to identify themselves in a certain way, so be it. But it doesn't change the fact that it looks like, to most reasonable thinking people, that what they're saying is political. It has mm-hmm. almost nothing to do with the core of the Islamic faith. I'm not a scholar, and I'm not a religious person, so sure. I'm not an expert in any way. But I think where it's going is that we get to choose in our nation if we want to live up to those ideals mm-hmm. that cause us to come together around those ideals that have made us strong and can make us stronger, or we get to let people divide us and say some people are in and some people are out and make these generalizations. Mm-hmm. And the generalizations don't, again, go back to the PCR ideals. They recognize their interconnections. They promote justice. I mean,
right.
and you know, reject vengeance. I'll say one thing that's not so much a political thing, but just an observation. So, for example, when the horrible things that happen in France, when they end up meaning that bombs get dropped on not only ISIS, but on innocent people that civilians. Are yeah. in the same zone, it's hard to sort of clap your hands and say, wow, that's mm-hmm. just fantastic, right. because, you know, that doesn't seem to work for the people who just, you know, experience that.
Well, what you're talking about is turning the other cheek, which is, to a degree, I mean, which is kind of a part of the idea of peace, I think.
Well, I'm not actually talking about turning the other cheek necessarily, although that is an interesting idea. What I'm talking about, when I say promote justice, I'm talking about the way that justice is doled out is in a way that recognizes interconnections, mm-hmm. that okay. rejects vengeance, and that, you know, lives up to some kind of international law.
Which would keep it from being just, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's interesting. You'd mentioned one other program. We have a few minutes left. Another program that the Peace Museum is doing soon, working with the Neon Movies, a partnership that you've started with the Downtown Theater.
Well, we are going to schedule some more dates out there with Jonathan, the
Jonathan
manager
McNeil,
of the
yeah.
Neon.
Good guy.
Great guy.
I should have him in sometime.
Yeah. You should. Yeah. He's a great guy. But monthly sort of, our whole theme for this year at the Peace Museum is invent peace.
Okay.
So most Thursdays we're going to have different topics so we can learn about nonviolence. Mm-hmm. Then every quarter we want to have TED-like talks.
Oh,
so people
cool.
can take their most powerful idea around nonviolence
yeah.
and sort of express it. And then finally, we also want to have these events that take place with at the Neon.
Mm-hmm.
So along
That's
with
cool.
tips, it should be a really great year of learning.
You mentioned the website. Tell us again what that is so that people
so
can...
So it's www.daytonpeacemuseum.org.
Excellent. Final thoughts, what does peace look like to you? You talk about that a lot for other people, but how would you define it?
I think what peace looks like for me is recognizing that there's a lot of good stuff in life.
Mm-hmm.
And when I experience that good stuff, it's also an opportunity to pay forward, to do mm-hmm. more, mm-hmm. to listen more carefully.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like being grateful, listening, and doing what you can.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah.
Is
Rotarians would say service above self.
We're so. Both in Dayton Rotary together.
Uh-huh.
that's true. They would. Well, I mean, a lot of what Rotary does is about peace. Certainly the whole polio eradication thing. And
peace is a big emphasis with Rotary.
Yeah, it is very much. It's one of the reasons I like the organization. Yeah. I've had a lot of fellow Rotarians in on the show.
Yeah.
They tend to be just interesting folks, a couple minutes left. Are you enjoying the job? You've been in it now 2 years at the Peace Museum? Or?
A year and a half.
Okay.
Well, almost 2 years, I guess.
Yeah.
It's getting there.
It's getting close, yeah.
I am enjoying the job.
Because I think we had you in like shortly after you'd started mm-hmm. the job last, yeah.
I spend too much time at the museum. I'm getting out more.
Oh, cool.
And as I get out more, like I was at a Culture Works meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, the things we're doing with the arts mm-hmm. and, you know, I get to go over to the Schuster Center and experience that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so yeah, Dayton is a great place to be and a great place to work. I live downtown, so mm-hmm. great place to work.
The Schuster, I think, has an African-American History Month or Black History Month art exhibit up in the Winter Garden right now.
In February,
which I need to stop by and see. Will you come back sometime soon?
I'd love to. It's great to see you.
Yeah, you as well. I always enjoy talking about the Peace Museum because it's one of those things where... it's just really cool that it's here, and I'm glad we've got it. So,
well, people come on down and check us out. If you haven't been in the last year and a half, a lot of new changes.
Yep.
Come see us.
Lots to see. We've been here with Jerry Leggett, fellow Dayton Rotarian and the executive director of the Dayton International Peace Museum. Thanks again for coming in.
Okay.
And this has been Miami Valley Voices on this Cox radio station. It's a Super Bowl Sunday, so this afternoon, we didn't even start on football. This afternoon, hope your team wins, and we'll see you here next week. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Ron Rollins. Have a great Sunday afternoon, and Jerry, thanks again for coming in.
Okay, take care.